This episode of the Disc Golf Podcast is brought to you by otbdiscs.com.
At one point in time, if you listened to the show, you knew about our little secret site to get awesome discs. It's not a secret anymore. It is a site where you can learn everything about the discs you're purchasing before you actually have them in your hands.
Get disc weight, dominess, flatness, all kinds of ratings. Learn it before you get it in there and get your favorite disc at only the best discs, otbdiscs.com. Use promo code DGPODCAST to get free shipping on your next order. What's up, disc golfers? Welcome to episode 216 of the Disc Golf Podcast. My name is Robin, and alongside me, my longtime friend, avid disc golfer, Joe.
So last week, we definitely recorded a 216, but the file totally was corrupted, so we're re-recording now.
We are going to try to recreate verbatim the previous podcast. It's going to be fine.
Because I didn't eat enough pizza, though. I don't have the farts. There were so many farts that episode.
Great. I'm glad we're doing two episodes in a row with a fart opening. That's good. I think.
Well, they didn't hear that episode.
No. Well, you talked about farts in the very beginning of the episode with Tyler Brickley in 215. So
it was, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
If you recall, it was the primary topic of the intro of that episode as well. But I wouldn't blame you if you don't. I think.
Are you trying to say farts aren't hilarious?
No, I'm trying to say that perhaps there were some extenuating circumstances that would make your memory a little hazy.
No, that's like the end of the episode that's more hazy. The beginning was pretty fine.
I think. Are you sure? Because you don't remember this part of it. But that's okay. That's okay. We can.
I knew there was a whole pizza joke and I had pizza right there. It was hilarious.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Well, now you do. You just repeated it previously.
Well, I was talking about anyways.
That was 215, though. This is the 216 episode that we're trying to
re-record.
Yeah. So, like, come
but
on.
But my point was that there won't be as many farts this time.
Oh, okay.
As the original, now corrupted, gone forever recording.
Of course. Yeah, definitely. This is...
That's what happened.
We haven't blown our cover whatsoever. But luckily for you, we have another hard-hitting... Full of facts, journalistic approach to disc golf, amazing podcast for you. And that is in no way complete hyperbole.
I heard Brody bought Discraft.
I also heard that too. And I think that's something we should just run with. It's definitely an accurate fact that is something we should talk about on this show.
And we researched very well.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Brody Smith, by the way.
Oh, okay. You're talking about Bodie Miller?
No, it's not Brody Sanchez.
Oh, okay. Who's Brody Sanchez?
He's like a multimillionaire who his stepson really likes disc golf.
Okay.
I heard he bought Discraft.
Oh, okay. All right, so are we talking about...
No, let's just move on.
Are we talking about Austin Turner right now, or...?
Kind of. Well, you know what? We never really talked about it because there's, like, as journalists, I don't think we ever found enough research to really understand that situation. So I think we just left that alone.
Typically a wise choice, but we are somewhat reckless journalists and tend to go off script here and there, perhaps discuss some things that not
all right. Here's the real truth.
Okay.
Austin Turner, very much like Captain America, was a scrawny, small child, and his stepfather, who has a lot of money, paid for experiments to be done on him. He was actually used to be right-handed, too.
Okay.
So he got taller and a little more bulky and became left-handed.
Okay.
And therefore, his stepfather bought him his disc golf career so far.
So Austin Turner is a cyborg of some kind, is what you're you're going.
No,
with?
No, no, hormone therapy. It's not not robot parts.
Even better.
Not robot parts. You know, just a lot of genetic experimentation.
Okay. Could you continue? I think I could use further clarification on this.
You know, various serums and
essential oils.
Mostly essential oils. through diffusers, though. Multiple diffusers.
Yes.
Multiple diffusers in the same room.
Okay.
With different essential oils.
Okay.
And you're going to hate this one. And chiropractors were there, too.
Okay.
And they built him into a left-handed disc golfer who's good sometimes. I don't know last time I really saw him play, but I'm pretty sure that time he was pretty good disc golf.
Do the chiropractors prescribe medicines? Because that's important.
They prescribe ointments.
Ointments, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That you can only buy from them, though.
Okay, that's right.
They're proprietary blends.
Of
essential oil creams,
yes. Uh-huh.
That they make themselves.
Good. I like this. You're doing well. What else has been the key to Austin Turner's success as a disc golfer, Joe?
Oh, no, that's it. There's not really.
Oh, okay.
That's pretty much.
You're done with the shovel? You're going to put it down?
Are you trying to say that I'm going in strange tangent?
I'm just saying you were digging a nice little position. One that was going to be well protected from.
And I dug straight through the earth, through its core, and came out.
Yeah, yeah.
Angina.
Weird. But yeah, I mean, you did great. You did real good, buddy. I'm really proud of you.
Prove me wrong.
All right. Well,
I can get back to that part from 2:15.
Oh, boy. We got a great show for you guys tonight. Journalistic excellence. To the end, we're going to talk about Ricky Wysocki managing to, at a minimum, tie Paul McBeth. It appears that he overtook Paul McBeth for a PDGA rating so far this year, which will stay the same for both of them since they aren't playing any more tournaments. But we have James Conrad trying to stay present in our minds while also not telling us where he's going, which hurts our feelings. And then we have Brody Smith, who made it to 999 rated, which I think a lot of people would be surprised by. I think in our podcast, we speculated that we thought he would get to like 975 or so.
We said high nine, so we nailed it.
So I'd say we nailed it. We did a good job of figuring out what Brody Smith would do, and I'm sure he's very happy about that because he loves the show and loves our opinion on his stuff. So
I think he does sometimes, just not when it has to do with like money and whatnot.
Yeah. And then we will do our world famous deer review, our disc and beer pairing, where we take a disc, we take a beer, we review them both, and let you know whether you should bring it on the course. Tonight we have the Disc Mania Link, which is a 2-speed, 3-glide, 0-turn, 1-fade putter. And we're going to pair that with Can O Bliss by Oscar Blues, which is a 7.2% citrus IPA. So, nice, easy, right down the middle deer review, a 7.2% IPA and a, you know, neutral putter. Like, how could you go wrong with that?
Yeah. Yeah. This is Robin's, you know, it's like both of our wheelhouse kind of like.
Yeah. Like a slightly potent IPA and a.
I mean, you can just say putter in general, but more neutral putter.
Now, do you plan to say that the disc feels good in the hand, Joe? Or are we going
to. I don't know. We'll find out when we get to deer review.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to touch it some more, you can.
I will say something right now, talking about putters, speaking Robin's language. So a while back, y'all know, I moved from judges to pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And
then kind of moved back to like a hybrid.
I was getting there. I came out the gate doing pretty well with pilots, and then I hit like a wall and was not putting well. And I think it was just putting in general, not really blame of the pilots. But, of course, me being the disc golfer I am, I somewhat blame the pilots.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought a handful of judges home to putt with, and then went and played my next round and putted really well with Pilot. So I was like, never mind. This is going to be the round that I decided if I was going to try and mess with judges for putting again, and Pilot's worked well. So I have a stack of four judges at my house, and yesterday I actually went out and did some putting and talking about feeling good in the hand, the Pilots feel so much better than the judge.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that. I was not expecting to really even feel a difference, but there is the Pilot is absolutely flat. Actually, as you beat them in, I'm finding out they get a little concave. And there's a little bit of dome on judge.
So
that I never
are
really
you
thought
putting
about.
With Electron soft or just standard Electron?
Standard Electron. So not soft, not stiff, just standard. I did buy some firm. Sorry, I bought a few
That's
firm.
True. Yeah, firm.
My bad. And I did not. I did. They're a little more stable. Actually, I bought some. Cosmic Electron, which are all firm. I found out that just that mixture doing it, they came out firmer than they thought, so they're all technically firm.
They are super hard.
Which, they look awesome, but I'll tell you, when I think that was actually the biggest thing that pushed me away from putting with Pilots for a minute, is because I wanted to mess with the firm, and it was definitely more stable than I wanted for my putter. So I went back to the ones that I was like kind of beating in, which I brought up before too, that I'm finding that I actually really do like to beat in the Pilots for putting, whereas with judges, I wanted like as fresh as possible. Anyways, long story short, the Pilot feels way better in the hand than the judge. And I never really thought that was going to be the case, but I definitely like the feel putting with Pilots more than judges. And they're working right now, so I'm happy with them.
No, that's good. I'm not familiar with putter changes, so it's hard for me to like fully understand, where you're coming from.
How are your roaches doing?
They're not in my bag, but it's not really important. What? Sorry, what?
What? What?
Okay, I have.
Do we want to get into that now, or do we want to? Yep. Oh, we're getting into it.
I think I have to come clean here. I've been bought. I was purchased by Mint Discs. They fully swayed me on their wonderful disc. I did the review on the bullet, and one of my main sticking points was I would really love to see a premium plastic version and how it flies. And what do you know? Suddenly, about a week later, in my mailbox, unbeknownst to me,
I knew it was happening.
An unlabeled, seemingly premium proto bullet arrives at my doorstep, and it's a problem. It's a legit problem.
People are good at this shit. I mean, that's almost exactly why I moved to Pilots.
And I
talked about Pilots, and all
I can't
got,
control myself. Yep, I have no control. I felt it, and it was nice, and then I threw it, and it was more stable than I thought it should be and could be.
In a good way.
And it flies nice and glides nice, and I was like, well, I can miss putts with anything, so like the putting part is good, but if I can throw it nicely, that's what I want. So I throw bullets now. The roach is not in my bag. And Joe got me a couple of Royal Soft bullets, and so I have that, and I have I'm feeling like an elitist when I say this because I know they don't exist for
plebs,
for the plebs, but I also have an Eternal Proto bullet, which is fucking sweet, and I can't wait for people to get their hands on these for a regular run because they're gonna love them. And it's, it really was the fact that I got one that I could drive with and trust it and have the nice stability to just like rip it and have it. It's nice.
Yep.
Okay. I feel like I've had like this huge weight taken off my shoulders.
Should we continue talking about our bags, or do you want to give us a rundown? We'll get into that later.
Do we really care about what Brody Smith did and Conrad? And,
I mean, we already talked about Brody Smith. That's fine.
Ricky, I think Ricky and Paul is interesting.
I think Ricky and Paul is good, and I think a little quick talk about Casey White.
Yeah, because I don't think that people understand how well Ricky played this year. And just because he doesn't have the big wins.
Big signature wins, yeah.
On there, but that he really did play fantastic. Similar to how, like, Paul has been like, oh, well, even in the years where he was losing to Ricky, he still had a fantastic rating.
Yep.
And would kind of bitch about, like, well, I did fine. I just didn't win these certain things. So, it's a similar situation with Ricky, where he played really, really well, but they just didn't have the accolades to pair with it. So it's interesting to see that he managed to overtake Paul in rating by fractions of a point.
Right.
Something along those lines. Yeah. So very interesting. They're both 10.54.
Right.
But Ricky's listed ahead of him at this point. So.
Right. And there's been no fanfare about the 10.54 Paul Macbeth anything.
Yeah. Thankfully, we didn't have it could be like a Paul Macbeth -2 Zeus, or -3.
He prints money, whatever he wants.
So we have a 10 assigned 10.57 Zeus bottom stamp on the wall.
It's an onyx.
Onyx. Oh, you're right. Really? That's a pretty wide rim.
You're right. That's a Zeus.
Yeah.
That's for sure a Zeus. Yeah. I looked over at it, yeah.
And
we have 1060 something.
Paul actually sent it directly to us right after we it
definitely wasn't Danny from OTB.
No, definitely not. No, it was Paul messaged us and was like, "Hey, I've got this Zeus laying around. Would you like me to sign it and send it to you?" And we're like, "Of course, dude. I mean, if you want to, I don't really care, but do it."
Just like our is that a vulture? Our foundation disc golf.
Oh yeah, no, super signed. That's an Undertaker.
Undertaker, yeah.
The order number 3000 from Foundation Disc Golf. Yeah, that was definitely.
Yep.
Signed by Zatch and Huntier.
Oh yeah, and not the other guy because he wasn't there yet.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. He hadn't, driven a rift between them yet.
Steve, Kyle.
Oh my god. but
I don't know his name. I feel like it is I've watched some of the content, so I will be on they're not totally off my radar. I feel like it's a pretty common name. I'm gonna stop this now because I feel even worse.
Bodie Miller,
Brodeem,
it's something like that. In any case, back to Ricky Wysocki and Paul Macbeth. Relevant, highly rated disc golfers. It's interesting. I cannot wait to see. You know, Ricky, he had thrown Innova before. We know that, and so I don't think he had to get used to his bag or anything like that in the past. But
And all the discs are there, and we've talked about that. Like the amount of discs available to disc golfers is so much higher than it was when he first moved to Prodigy, even they didn't have a full line to really, and he still did well.
Yeah.
And then going to Lat, it was getting there, but it's like Innova's got everything. I think we've reviewed discs that they have three discs that have the same numbers.
Yeah.
From Innova.
The other thing is that Ricky played two more events than Paul did, so had Paul played in a couple extra events, there's a good chance that this doesn't really, that he's still ahead of him. But nonetheless, it just goes to show that these guys, talent-wise, aren't all that far apart. And I'm looking forward to, hopefully, another Paul and Ricky battle in 2021, where we see the two of them at their best and just dominating, really. So I think that's important. I think we haven't yet seen anyone else step up to the level of consistency that both of those players have done for the last 4 years.
It's a real man-tooth burgundy dilemma.
But we've seen guys step up. You know, we've seen Kevin Jones show that he can be elite for periods of time, and we've seen Heimberg come up, and we've seen all these different players do it. But
Eagle
as well. But we haven't seen any of them sustain that 10-55 type disc golf for 4 years or even 2 years or that sort of thing. So they're all at that like 10-50 type area, but that's important when you get to that high level play. Yes, you'll win some tournaments against them, but you're not going to get every single one. So it's I hope we see some people, you know, ascend and challenge them, but I also would be totally, I'll take it with both hands, the Paul Ricci battle of the past years. I'll take it again in 2021 over you know, someone else stepping up. It's a great battle, and they both have such diverse games.
So what are the odds? I would love that too, but I feel like this could also be that catalyst for Paul to go fuck you mode again too.
Of course. Well, I mean, he could.
When's the last time he wasn't number one?
Probably three years ago now.
Yeah.
2017.
Yeah, two or 3 years. I mean, not that he's, you know.
I mean,
not that he didn't have an amazing season.
I can look this up.
I will say,
literally have it in front of me.
We brought it up multiple times. Paul's putting was not.
So Paul was obviously number one in 2019.
Yep.
And he was number one in 2018. And in 2017, he was also number one in the ratings. So it would have to be 2016.
But there's probably, like, maybe 17 there was, like...
Even 2016 he took home.
But that's overall. But I mean, like, for the last 2 years, every ratings update, he was number one. I think there was some back and forth with Rick where Rick was number one, and then Paul was number one, and it went back and forth. And the last 2 years, at least, have been nonstop Paul, every update being on top. So
it looks like I just quickly went through the PDGA player statistics and sorted by rating, and it looks like 2013 was the last year that that Paul McBeth wasn't number one in rating. Now Ricky had his world's wins in there, but in terms of rating, Paul from 2014 all the way until this year was number one. So.
Crazy.
So, yeah.
Crazy, crazy.
That's wild. Unless I sorted that wrong or
I mean,
but
if anything, even if we just say 3 years, like, we don't need to go.
No, I mean, I'm going back through it again. And
I know you are. I'm just saying, just in that, too, it can be hard to, like, not keep pushing and driving super hard when you're, I don't know. The top. So I guess it's all we'll see. But Rick too,
I mean, scoring 1060 as a rating in 2019 is absolutely insane.
Yeah, I think we have 1060 Onyxes. I think we have those.
Yeah. I mean, that is just bananas.
And they're definitely on the wall, not on the floor in a stack. I think they might be right there on the table.
Yeah, they are.
Definitely not in a stack of very nice expensive.
They're right there. I know where they are.
I know. I see them right there. I'm just
making
funsies.
Pretty incredible. That's quite an accomplishment. And as you heard, I thought that Ricky had taken over ratings in in at least a couple of those years, especially his Worlds wins. You know, in 2014, Paul famously beat Ricky in a playoff. And then, you know, Rick had his wins in, what, 2016, 2017?
Yep.
And looking like he was new, but he still, in those years, didn't outplay Paul from a rating standpoint. So
here's a crazy question, and I know like there's been like Simon's done this on his YouTube and whatever. He did Eagle even once at the top of, and this is such a random thing, I'm just thinking about it. At the top of their putting game, Paul or Ricky?
Oh, Ricky, no question. Ricky was making everything inside a circle too.
Paul was though too.
No, he wasn't. Not Paul. Not this, not like
year.
That.
Oh, that's true.
You said top of their game.
You're right. You're right.
You no. That's no. There's no. There's
Q,
no.
Q Drew Gibson. That's because Paul was in circle one.
That's true. He had more opportunities in circle one because he was in circle one.
Well, Ricky had more opportunities in circle two because he was in circle two.
Yeah, that's also accurate.
Yeah.
It's totally relevant statistics.
Anyways. Yeah, me too. Me too. Just so the thing is, like, Rick's top of game, the reason I give it to Rick, not just because nails, but that putt style with the nose down just, like, fights every condition.
Yeah.
He
is well prepared for wind and different putting conditions, upslope, downslope, whatever you're dealing with. He just bangs. Like, Paul is awesome, and he makes shots from deep all the time, but he never quite did it like Rick did in that span.
Yeah.
Where he got his titles.
Yep. Yep.
It was unreal. And he made it look easy from a putting stance.
You know what? Just because I started this conversation, I'm going to continue. At top of their game, I will take, and I still think it's probably current game too because they're killing it. This is controversial. I think you will not like this. I would take Paul's forehand over Rick's.
You're also wrong.
I knew you'd say that.
Just because of the top of game thing. I do think that right now, just because we haven't seen Rick throw forehands dominantly for the last couple of years, we still see Paul doing it. If you just base it on what we've seen in tournaments, Paul currently throws a forehand better than Ricky does. But Ricky was like, you know, we talk about Eagle now as the gold standard for just wow forehands. That was Ricky.
Right, but I think we're
but
looking...
But it stopped happening.
But I also think we're looking at Ricky then. So I think Ricky then, in those championship years, is the top of his forehand. I think Paul's at the top of his forehand right now.
I don't think Paul's...
And I think Eagle...
Paul's forehand hasn't changed that whole time.
Has skewed our judgment so much because of how much power Eagle has in that forehand.
Yeah.
I think Paul's forehand is just as powerful right now as Rick's was.
No. Paul's forehand hasn't changed since that time. He's always had that nice, consistent forehand. It hasn't changed at all.
I think he's packed a little juice on it.
Not to the point where I don't know why Ricky has gone away from his forehand so much, but he really doesn't use it as much at all. I'd love to see, like, this is the kind of thing we see in other sports. We get a statistical analysis of something where you see, like, in certain situations, what they use, what type of shot.
Like the pitchers and stuff.
Yeah, distribution of shot shaping and stuff like that. I you know, we see U-Disc and all these different, actually pretty much just U-Disc, giving us all these different stats on how players play. But I would love to see something along those lines, just giving me actual data beyond what I see with my eyes that shows me that Ricky stopped throwing forehands 2 years ago and we don't know why.
I'm going to say because his backhand got better.
It doesn't
and it's
seem
always
like
been
it got
good,
that much
it's
better,
really
though.
Even, it's good, like he has...
I mean, he's still playing well, but...
Totally. I just think you know, watching a handful, maybe even just one, where he was on like one of those skins matches, and he consistently, which he should, like, we know he should and would, but I think to like a more casual viewer, just hearing about Rick and him just being him, you wouldn't think it possibly, but he won every long drive there was. Like, he's a top-tier backhand thrower.
Wait, Rick won every long drive there was?
In the skins match, where they have a special hole.
Okay.
That it's like the long drive gets an extra $50.
Okay.
No, not...
Got it.
In the history of disc golf, has never lost a long drive.
Sorry, I was just, you know, just trying to piece it together. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for clarifying, because maybe it wasn't clear to listeners, so that's good.
Yeah.
Yes, no, on skins matches.
Okay.
Where it's like, oh, the long drive gets a little extra money here.
I know, but I don't think that means I it's always seemed to me Ricky has a somewhat unorthodox backhand.
Oh, he's a big wide rail boy.
And the yeah, exactly. And like he kind of it almost looks like he's stopping and at the end, and then like he flails his hand open. It looks strange. He gets great results, but it just and it almost seems like he's going from low to high as well, which typically is not something you would recommend from a form standpoint. But when you look at it in slow motion, you see how he gets to that point. It's
yeah.
just that the way he, after his release, just has kind of like a different look to it. So you kind of, it changes how you view that form. Just based on how he finishes it.
Well, I wonder if that pushed him.
But like he throws a driver and it looks like he's throwing a putter on an upshot.
Yeah,
you know, and it that's fantastic. He goes, he gets great distance and does all that. But I still think there's been a number of times where I've watched him playing and just been like, I know Ricky used to throw a forehand on this hole, and he didn't, and I don't know why.
Total theory,
but I can't put any sort of data.
All of our time watching him was Prodigy and Trilogy until Innova, and Innova really is that big turning point where he went more backhand than
well forehand. It was Innova first,
right? But we weren't watching that as much.
Yeah, I mean, we were.
Was he as forehand dominant then?
Yes.
Okay.
He wasn't forehand dominant. He was always both, but he had a great forehand, and he threw Innova.
Yeah. My thought, too, just with Innova versus those other two brands, and I know they've both gotten better since then, but he throws super overstable shit.
Yeah.
That those brands, like Prodigy early on, didn't have really beefy drivers. Like a D1 was the most stable driver, distance driver they had, and it's not crazy.
Maybe, yeah.
Stable.
I
they
know.
Definitely didn't have
I
a
don't,
Firebird.
I'm not enough of an expert on Prodigy to say what their stability was on those discs in the beginning. But yeah, I mean, he still throws the forehand. It's not like he doesn't.
Oh, no, totally.
It's just that there's been a number of holes where it seems like a no-brainer forehand where even Paul pulls it out, and I say even Paul has a fantastic forehand, but it could just be like a player shot selection sort of situation. Like, I don't feel confident in the
yeah.
shot at the moment.
It's 100% confidence.
Because how many times have you had something where it used to be your bread and butter, and you, for whatever reason, maybe the last five times you did it didn't work, and you're just not feeling confident, so you don't do it. And when you're in a competitive situation, that's important.
Or you try something funky on a practice round, you're like, that felt really good and it went where I want.
Yeah.
Let me try it again. Oh, it's still working.
Yeah.
I guess maybe just I'll do that.
Totally. So we'll see. I would hope that we'll see it. But you also have situations like, you know, Simon Lazat, who is not a forehand thrower, but he dabbled in the forehands this last year and ended up injuring his elbow to the point.
He always dabbled. He always had a serviceable...
Yeah, but
like forehand
to the point where he
holes.
had to shut himself down
yep.
and you
now
know
he's going through physical therapy
exactly, and he's pretty sure he's going to be ready for the beginning of the season, but
yeah, he's thinking maybe
who knows
February.
Yeah,
He had a. I've been watching a good amount of his videos. He had a whole video of his
Simon videos are always good. I love checking them out.
So he went through like his full like went to the physical therapist and like talked about all his all his shit.
Yeah, we get to see his lady on one of his videos. That was nice.
And his house, and I know
good to see his better half.
We watched his I watched his like walk through the house thing, and I know so many people in Slack were like, oh, this house is so cool. Like, wow, dream house. And I'm like, my wife would divorce me if I was like, hey, in our living room and like our main space for company, I want to just throw a big ass pool table in the middle of our living room. Yes, I have this cool furnished basement, but that's not where the pool table is going to go. The pool table is going to go in the middle of the fucking living room.
Well, you know, I mean, it's
I mean,
I totally agree. I would not be able to negotiate that either.
Oh, hell no.
But
that's how much she loves him.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe she loves pool too. Who knows? But like, that's the very start of the video. I'm like,
yeah, what if, really, what if she's the pool shark?
Maybe. No.
Oh, come on. Why not? No. What evidence do you have that she's not the one that loves pool?
If she did and she killed, I guarantee fucking she would be on a video. Well, we got a few more days of Vlogmas or whatever.
We've had tons of these videos. We haven't seen her yet, so it's totally possible that maybe there's...
We would have heard fucking something somewhere.
We haven't even... This is the first time we've ever seen her. How do you know?
Maybe. No, from someone that we know, maybe, we would have heard something.
Maybe they met at a pool hall and they played pool against each other the first time they met, and it was like the moment that they fell in love, and that's why they have a pool hall in their living room. How do you know?
Maybe that is the maybe that's a pool table from their first date.
It is. It could be. This is kind of wild speculation you guys sign up for on the Disc Golf Podcast.
Yep.
Let's put it on the record right now. The pool table in Simon's living room is the pool table.
So this is what Robin's saying. I'm saying it's not. We're going to find out. And when we find out, what we're betting is the loser has to crack two smelling salts and put one in each nostril.
Oh, God, no.
And just take a big rip.
This is horrible.
You're confident in your idea.
I'm not confident. I'm making a
joke. You're super confident. It's fine. Set in stone. This is going to happen. It'll be great. It'll be great for the podcast.
The pool table of love where they met and discovered how much they love each other, and Simon probably did some weird trick shot on a pool table, because how could Simon not do it? Like, Simon plays pool. You know he's putting some English on the balls and making some weird shots.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Is that a thing? That's a pool thing?
Yeah, I think, like, he's got, like, a whole, like, dart setup. He's got his whole disc wall.
Yeah.
But I'm just like... Your living room's like, you're entertaining, like, let's bring people over, hang out, and the majority is taken up by a pool table.
Just, hey,
you know.
Listen, there's lots of fun things you can do on a pool table. I'm sure you're aware of that, Joe.
You can play nine ball. You can play...
Do you remember your first time on a pool table? I remember the first time I played pool.
And you broke the light above it with the pool cue?
Pool tables are great. I'm just saying. Like,
they're like fucking hard.
It's a good time for everyone. They are.
No, they're fucking.
That's because
they're slate. They're not rad. They're fucking heavy and super hard. I've moved so many pool tables. They're whatever.
Joe hates pool tables.
I don't hate pool tables. Pool's great. But like, when you work at a place that people are like, oh, we'd like to donate our pool table, and you have to go fucking pick it up. And then you're like, all right, let's try and get it with these like three dudes who aren't very strong, and we don't know what we're doing. Oh, fuck, we just leaned it on the side and the leg broke off. Well, fuck, there goes that. Neat. We still got to get it out of this weird room that somehow they got in because they're fucking multimillionaires, and someone took it apart and put it together in this room, but now we're expected to just put it on its side and throw it on fucking dollies and get it out and then into a fucking van and get it back into the building. That doesn't work. That's stupid. What a fucking idiotic idea.
This is wildly specific. Is that...
Has this ever happened to you?
kind of sounds like that possibly happened to you. Is there someone you'd like to call
more than once?
Someone you'd like to call out specifically, or
no? I don't remember their names. I just know like the last pool table we got donated, we did it all right. Everyone did it right. We said sure we would love it, but if you really want that tax write off, all that shit, you know what you could also write off? Paying a company to take it apart, move it, put it where we need it, level it, make sure it's good. You can write all that. We'll put that all in the receipt to you. Do all that shit because we're not picking anything up anymore.
I'm making fuck fun that. Of you, but I actually separated my AC joint moving a pool table once.
Dude, they suck.
It cost me like 8 weeks of like just shoulder pain. It sucked. It was horrible.
When did you do that?
It was in Davis. I helped some people move it from my house because I had a pool table at my house that I had gotten. Remember, because I think it was the pool table from, never mind, I don't remember where it came from. But I helped.
I think maybe it came from the club or something.
I think it might have.
It did. I remember like getting a pool table. I remember that. Remember that.
Or wasn't it the Siesta House?
In the garage, maybe?
Yeah.
I got it from the club, got it to the garage.
Yep.
Fuck. Wow.
Yeah.
So long ago.
So got that to my garage, but then moving it to another poor soul's house, lifting on one side, thinking I was a badass, could lift a pool table with two other people on the other side, me on the other, and ended up separating my AC joint.
Oh, no. That's... Yes, you can lift it off the ground.
Yep.
You can't lift and move it with two other people.
No.
Hell
no.
Fucking no.
No. Woo! No, it was not cool.
I have lifted it to get someone put a piano dolly underneath legs, but never like tried to be like, I'm just going to get, ooh.
Whew. It was a bad idea.
That just made my shoulder hurt.
Yeah. All right. So James Conrad posted on social media. I read the Facebooks, right? Was that where it was?
Instagram.
Instagram. That's where it was. One of the super important, life elixirs that is the social medias of Facebook, Twitter,
one of the places
Instagram.
Where you can learn about and purchase essential oils.
Yeah, exactly. The places you guys need to check out and that are very important for people to be active on. But James Conrad decided to do that. He's generally been not terribly active. And suddenly we see a post on there, him telling us that he's doing good and wanting to share more about his life, which indicates that maybe a future sponsor or current sponsor has asked him to be more active on social media to promote a brand. That's how I read.
I did too, and I will. I'll go crazy and say I very much believe it is a new brand that he is chatting with.
So we've discussed this in other places, and you've said it before, how badly you want Conrad to be MVP sponsored. But just think about this, people. James Conrad Electron Envies. The world will buy those. Lots of them.
They'll buy them.
Lots of them. So...
Conrad, you want to throw a mayhem or a tantrum or
a photon or
a wave?
Yeah, waves would be sweet. That'd be great too.
Those will be purchased. But
that'll happen. Electron, it could be any number of envies, but he tends to be a non-premium plastic putter guy. But Electron Envies, that would be James Conrad, and plus you know, MVP wouldn't do him dirty on the stamp like Innova did.
Oh my God, it'd be so. I was actually just saying that.
So it'd be like a triple foil.
They might call up Thought Space Athletics and be like, "Hey, you gotta make something for this dude."
Get like a triple foil, awesome design that goes on there, and them shits gonna sell. So let's do that. Let's make that happen. That was the main point of me bringing up this section.
Can we start like a hashtag Conrad for MVP?
I think it's already started. I think people, there's enough like desire for this that it's there. Like the disc golf community wants it. And I think if MVP is serious about this, and I know they are, but at some point they have to sponsor a top tier player. Like, you have to do it. You can't be a top brand and not have a top tier, you know, every single tournament threat to win on your team. It's got to be there. So at some point they have to dip into that pool and pick up a player that is every week someone that you and I are going to pick on this show to win the tournament.
Yep.
That's important. So, and I think they've grown. I think they've done well, and there are tons of people that love their discs. And
do we say Conrad is best available?
Oh yeah, definitely. Right? Definitely.
I can't think of who else.
No, definitely best available that we know of. You know, like we've said in past shows, we don't have any idea what these contract structures are or what the ins and outs are. Like with other sports, we know, like, oh, this player has a player option, or this player is a restricted free agent, or the team has a vested option to keep them for the following year, or they can give them a franchise tag. We have no idea anything about any of the contracts for anyone in disc golf. We just...
Do you think...
like, we're lucky to find out the years.
When you talk contract and stuff, do you think Mint could be like, hey, Lat, we'd like to trade for Tristan Tanner. We'll give you Royal Plastic rights, and we'd like that player to become ours.
That would be another fantastic troll.
We'd like Emerson Keith. He will be now Texas Emerson Keith. Will be sponsored by a
and
Texas
you can
brand.
Continue to use Royal Plastic. Yeah.
Guy, I know you're listening. Use that.
Fantastic work.
Totally will work.
I love it.
So, other just quick hitter, Casey White extended 2 years with Discmania and was moved to the tour team, which is great. That's fantastic. Like, such a nice guy.
Yeah.
And plays well and is getting better. Like, I think he continued to get better. So good for him.
No, he's constantly working on his game. He had a fun, I listened to the podcast he recorded with Brian Earhart, which was really good. And it was fun to hear his kind of perspective on things and how he operates. He's kind of like you. He doesn't practice putting. He practices scenarios and like works from all different areas, but he doesn't ever like step up and like putt, do a bunch of putts from 10 feet and do a bunch of putts from 15 feet and do a bunch of putts from 20 feet and like the kind of standard, you know, what we accept as a putting routine. So that's not that I do that, but I used to. probably should start again considering how terrible my putting has been. But nonetheless, it was just kind of interesting perspective on disc golf and how he plays. So fun player to watch and listen to. I would highly recommend you check out.
And
I believe Earhart's podcast is called The Buzz.
No, he changed it.
Oh, he did.
He changed it because it's because he didn't want to be proprietary, I guess, with the
got it.
The Buzz.
I don't know what it's called now. Then
I don't know.
The Flight Diary. That's it.
I thought so. I wasn't sure. I was I'm not stepping on a different one. Yeah. Flight Diary.
Yeah.
Also, Casey White's girl plays. Like, she's been on a few videos, and she crushes. She might be up and coming, too.
Nice. That would be amazing. But, yeah, it's fun to see that. Good to see him kind of, like, as starting from, like, a kind of semi, like, awkward kid on this, on Simon's vlogs. Go all the way from that to a sponsored touring player that is, you know, an interesting presence in social media. And
yeah, well, go back to episodes where I was talking about the videos. Like, he's starting to beat Simon.
Yeah,
like, he's playing super well. His putting's gotten, his driving's gotten so much better.
But like in the earlier episodes, he's like struggling to make eye contact and stuff like that. But he's another one of those players. He's got a great forehand that is like.
Yep.
Wild, you know, really accurate and consistent, and his backhand power is there, but he's not elite by any means.
No,
but
funky form, he like reminds still, me of
But he's still one of those guys that he could put on like 15 pounds in the next 5 years just in getting older and stronger, and suddenly you're looking at somebody that can drive a little further.
Who's the SoCal dude with the OptoX Havocs that we have? Gosh. He's got the super goes under the arm, not girthy. Anyways, kind of funky form.
Okay.
He has funky driving form, but he gets it out there. It's doing well.
OptoX Havocs. Huh.
We like rediscovered the Havocs because I bought these Havocs. I'll whatever.
Like the crossing form. You're not talking about like Eric Oakley, obviously.
No. I'm talking like a SoCal OG player that.
Okay. All right. Well, figure it out and we'll get to it. The other bullet note, we had Brody Smith making it to 999 rated. Congrats, Brody. That's a massive accomplishment in a first year of competitive disc golf. Getting to that level, that's pretty awesome. So
Bobby Music.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so yeah, that's incredible. I think there's another ratings update. So there's a chance if he played another tournament and played well, he could in theory end. I'll have to look this up, but I think there's one more ratings update in 2020.
Oh.
So like I guess it's possible that he could be 1,000 rated by the end of 2020, which would be like I'm sure his you know absolute Schadenfreude. For all of his perceived haters.
Does he, just with the 999, does he even now say, and he might have already said this, I'm going to be totally honest and transparent, I have not looked at his social media or paid attention.
Neither have I, yeah, no.
He might have already said this. With a 999, does he feel like he's ready to full on tour open?
I would hope he does.
I would think so.
I think so. I hope he does. I know that earlier in the season, he was going to scale back and focus on competing at lower levels and working on his skills. But
well, and recovery from Lyme. So,
but I mean, even if the difference between a 1,000 rated disc golfer and the guys that win on a regular basis, the 10-50 players, is night and day.
Oh, yeah.
It's just totally different. It's like watching D1 college football and an NFL team. It's just the difference in the execution on those two levels are just absolutely opposite ends. It's wild. It doesn't seem like much, but you see little things, and so he's got another huge step to make, and that's the question: can he? We kind of thought when he started, like, hey, he is a physical specimen.
Oh,
he
yeah.
is talented. He knows how to throw, and he knows how to work hard. We know that he can dedicate himself to practice and try this, and we thought that he would get to high 900s. The question is, can he take the next step and take himself to a contending player, which in my mind, you got to get to 1040 plus. That's where you're in contention to win against a true open A-tier field. Otherwise, it's, you know, you'll be there, you'll be relevant, and we'll talk about you. But at that point, it's just, can he take that next step? And that's the next question for him.
I think he's on his way. I mean, from what I've seen,
he's going to work at it. He's
totally on his way. Putting's gotten a lot better. His upshots got a lot better. He has all the power. I think it's still finding, you know, and he's in this unique spot too, that he's done all of this, like learning discs in general.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have years of beating in discs and seeing how they fly over time.
He's got his own unique shots. I mean, I think the Scuba is legitimately a useful disc golf shot.
Oh yeah.
That more people should probably utilize. So I think that's an important part of his game, that he's able to improvise and use these other kind of shot-shaping skills that he's acquired over the years as a frisbee thrower. So it'll just be interesting to see whether getting to 1,000 will be a huge accomplishment. I have no doubt in my mind at this point that he'll get above 1,000 in 2021, if not make it there, if there is another race.
Right, right.
I didn't look at the schedule is, but I think there's one more.
I think so, because there's been a handful of tournaments, I think, just recently.
I think so. So I think there's one more in 2020, and if he played well, I'm sure we could look it up. It's possible that he could make it to 1,000 in 2020 at the last ratings update. So that would be a great accomplishment.
Totally.
And then can he build on that going forward and get to a point where he's a threat to win tournaments? I think he can get into low 1,000s. I don't know. I think it's hard to believe that he can get into, you know, 1040, 1045, where you have to be to actually win at these tournaments.
That's right. Right. Where it's cool, you can throw 550, but can you throw 550 into this bullseye
tunnel?
And by bullseye, I mean, like, you know, 100 feet across, but still, that is...
Well, and think of the, you know, the putts you have to make, not just in the circle, but putting great in circle one is important, but you also have to make some circle two putts. You have to be nails on your approaches. You got to stay down the middle on your drives. It's tough. It's a big difference.
You got to say, you know what? I know there's this gap. Just recognizing the available gaps takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
Just to stand somewhere in jail and say, like, I see this over here.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do I think I can hit that gap, I think I've got like an 80%. Like, I feel positive about hitting it. It's not a miracle to get through that. You know, there's lots of things that go into it. But if you think about it too, like, we don't talk about it this way. Kevin Jones has done something kind of similar. He came from playing a different sport.
Yeah.
And
but Kevin Jones is a lot younger.
Yeah.
And already a much higher rated player.
Right. And all that, you know.
It'll just be interesting to see where the ceiling is for him. He's obviously shown that he can rapidly pick up the sport and increase his rating, and he's not afraid of competition, which is probably the most, I guess it's not underestimated for him, because everybody knows that he's not shy of the moment, but that's an important part of playing in tournaments that he is already used to. He doesn't give a shit about the crowds. He doesn't care what you think. And he's going to go out there and be able to focus and play his game. Obviously, everyone will have mental struggles in a competitive round that is public. But, you know, so far he's done pretty well with it. And I think it's just going to be an interesting story. Does Brody Smith end up finishing out 2021 like 10.09 rated type thing and feel somewhat disappointed that he didn't get there? Or does he finish at 10.25 and you're like, okay,
oh, shit, let's go.
This is, he's, you know.
I don't think it's possible to go up that high.
He has very few rounds. It is possible.
Yeah, okay.
But it'll be interesting.
Right, yeah.
So.
Well, he will, regardless, like you said, regardless of whether it's this year or next, he will break 1,000. That's writing's on the wall.
Yeah, I think so. All right, you ready to get on to our deer review? Why are you leaving me hanging here?
Well, I thought we were going to talk about bags just a little bit.
Let's do it next week. We'll tease it.
Okay. Some things aside from just Robin's putter have changed in both of our bags. So we'll talk about that next week, and we'll probably talk about how that may or may not affect the DGP bag.
It probably will, because if there's changes in our bag, that means there should be changes in the DGP bag. So... tune in next week for that. If actually next week is Christmas, right? So next week, as in next episode.
Yeah. I mean, I'm off all next week.
I mean, we can find a place to record.
We probably can.
Yeah. All right. We'll try. We love you guys. We'll try.
Yeah. No guarantees, but we'll try.
Famous last words. We'll try.
Saying that out loud means it's probably not going to happen. But yeah.
All right. It's time for our world famous beer review, our disc and beer pairing, where we take a disc, we take a beer, we review them both, and let you know whether you should bring on the course. Tonight, we have the Discmania Link, which is a 2-speed, 3-glide, 0-turn, 1-fade putter. And we're pairing that with Cano Bliss by Oscar Blues, a 7.2% citrus IPA. Where do you want to start, Joe? Disc or beer?
Why don't you tell me about that D?
All right. So, the Discmania Link, which is one of the first kind of sets of their Evolution line. It is a beaded putter, and it is, how I would describe it, would be like a slightly more shallow beaded P2. So it's one of the things P2s feel a little bit weird for a lot of people because they're so deep on the inside rim. And so this one doesn't quite have that feel. It's a little bit more comfortable for I think most players that aren't used to it. And then it has the bead. And it's in their, this one is in their Exo Hard plastic. So part of their Evolution line. So Evolution was the
Lat 64.
The Lat 64 manufactured Discmania line. So nonetheless, pronounced bead on this disc. Nice blunt nose. Kind of reminds me of a Judge in terms of the profile, the feel, and the bead on it. It is more stable than a Judge. Not quite like a huge difference, but a little bit. It still gets a nice straight flight to it and gets really good glide, but will typically have like a solid finish at the end. So there's plenty of times where I was able to throw it and I might get a little bit of turn or a nice straight flight, but it still tended to want to give at least a little bit of fade at the very end. Even with an Anheuser, I would be able to get it to come out, though a couple Anheusers where I was able to get it to just kind of turn the whole way and finish flat. But I think it's more of one of those styles of putters where it'll fly straight and finishes at the end. It might turn a little bit, but it typically wouldn't hold that turn all the way through.
Unless you're oatsing or juicing it.
Yeah, unless you're doing something along those lines. So it was, you know, some putters you can put it out straight and it'll hold it and play. This one tended to have at least a little bit of finish to it. I think the 3-glide and the 2-speed are fine. The 0-turn, pretty close. I mean, I was able to see a little bit of flip, a decent amount of flip up.
It's also a 2-speed, like that, you know.
Yeah, a decent amount of flip up on it here and there, depending on the shot. And, you know, like if I throw it hard on a hyzer, I was definitely able to get it to flip up and hold. I wasn't seeing any throw it flat and let it turn over. It would fly straight and fade. Pretty typical for a workhorse putter on really any scale for disc golf. Just kind like, of like
pilot-y, but a little less glide.
Yeah. It really was just like a slightly more stable Judge. I think I can definitely throw a Judge farther just because of the glide for a Judge and also a little bit more turn. Like I never got with this disc the perfect laser beam go out and finish. It still kind of want, even if it was just 3-4 feet, it still wanted to kind of finish that out at the end and give me a little fade. So nothing crazy. But it still did, but it was a little different because I did see some kind of high speed turn early in the flight on it that I'm not, you know, I wasn't quite used to. So I think like I had a couple of throws where I threw it and it flipped up and I was like, oh look, it's got a little bit of turn to it, but then it still came out of it.
Yeah.
So
one thing I will say to just talking plastic. So this is the Exo Hard. Which the stiffness, like if I would think about Discmania in general, this, even though this is the Lat 64, this is made in Sweden, the stiffness reminds me of like D-Line, but it is so much more grippy than D-Line plastic. So this Exo Hard definitely has some nice tackiness, which is really nice to have something like that for a firm disc like this. And like Robin was saying, yeah, you get some turn. It's gonna come back and finish. It's not gonna finish super hard. You know, we're not saying it's gonna give you a big fade at the end, but it's gonna end to the left. You can trust it to do that. You know, like I said, if you rip it really hard, and for me, I have a good tendency ripping putters to get a little off axis torque. So that's the oat, which will, you know, make it turn, but that's really just a form flaw. But a nice flat solid pull with good clean form, you'll have a nice straight, maybe a little turn, and good finish to the left. Nice disc. I will say, and I talked about this earlier with pilots, currently I don't love firm plastic for putting putters or even driving putters. So I do drive with both pilots, and I did put it that Robin talked about, we can talk about more next week, but I do drive with a judge still too, a premium plastic judge. And even that chameleon judge is not as stiff as this. So that's a little funky, but it feels good. Yeah, it's a little bit, I think, yeah, that depth reminds me of a judge. It gets flatter after like a little bit of dome right off the edge of the flight plate.
Yeah, that's pretty flat overall.
Yeah, whereas like the pilot just goes straight to flat. So it's kind of in between a pilot and judge in the terms of like dome versus flat.
Well, pilots don't have that much beat either.
That's true. It's a pretty micro beat.
Yeah, I don't know that pilot's an accurate comparison.
But yeah, it definitely has that judge-esque big old bead. Yeah, it's a good disc. I can see why people love them.
Yeah, no, I very much enjoy it. I'm not a huge fan of beaded putters, but nonetheless, it flew nicely, and obviously, we've said this a ton of times, but we don't really review putters on this show on how they putt because, one, I got enough problems putting. I don't need to introduce trying to figure out how a particular disc putts. And I don't yet know how to talk about putting on a podcast that would be something useful for the listeners that they could apply to their game or take home from a disc. Like if I tell you that I stood 30 feet away and I threw it and it went straight in the basket, it's like, well, I could do that with a sidewinder and it would.
Well, that's because you putt with sidewinders.
It would be accurate and but that's of no use to anyone. So the best we can do is describe the actual driving characteristics of the putter and assume that if you like that, you can figure it out on the putting green. So that's kind of our general putter review policy. I just don't know, like, how someday someone will figure out how to give an actual helpful, relevant review of a putting mechanics to a putter,
well,
right?
Here's the real story. Here's the real, real story. Unless you're on the extreme side of putters, like you putt harps.
Yeah.
Or you putt pigs.
Or like you putt with a justice or something crazy right.
Aside from that world, and I'll tell you right now, and this is going to blow people's minds, and I think disc golf companies are going to hate me right now because they're going to feel like I'm taking money and food away from them. If you are missing consistently 20 feet and inside, changing your putter is not going to fix that.
Yeah, unless you're putting with like a Boss or
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Outside of extremes, if you're consistently missing within 20, and listen, I've lived that world. I lived that world hard. I changed so many putters early on before I found the Wizard and then Judge and now Pilot. Before I got to the wizard, I probably went through 8 different putters because I was like, oh, it's the putter. It's the putter. It's not me. It is you.
Yep.
If you are consistently missing within 20.
I'm going to take this one step further. It's always you.
True. True.
I mean, unless you're using a disc from like Whammo or Lightning or one of these other disc golf brands that doesn't really make true disc golf discs, but they sell disc golf discs, it's you.
But I will say, like, 25 and out, me tossing a fresh wizard to the basket versus like my beat up pilot.
Yeah.
You got to put it on a whole different little world because it's going to hook up more. You need to change your putting stroke at that distance. It's still you to change that putting stroke, but the putt stroke's not going to mean a lot within 20 feet is what I'm trying to say.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's very much
It's really probably 30 feet, but I'm just trying to make myself feel better.
15 feet?
And by 30 feet, I mean probably like 40 feet. Anyways.
Are you sure you don't mean 23 feet?
Shut up. It's fine.
16 feet? 8 feet. Right, how about 8 feet?
All right, let's start with a beer.
All right. Cano Bliss Tropical IPA by Oscar Blues, 7.2%. This is Oscar Blues out of Oregon, right?
I believe so, yeah.
And let's see, brewed and canned by Oscar Blues Brewery, Longmont, Colorado.
Oh, yeah, Colorado. I knew it was Colorado. Why'd I go along with you?
They also have Longmont, Colorado, Brevard, North Carolina, and Austin, Texas.
Well, they're Colorado first.
Wow, I couldn't have fucked that up more. But nonetheless.
Have you ever had a bad Oscar Blues beer?
No, I have not. And this falls in the same category we say with the other ones, like when we talk about Sierra Nevada. We love doing beers like this that are good, made by good breweries, because we know that most people listening to the show can get this beer, drink it, and relate to what we're saying. So I'm happy to have another beer that is not like a brewery local to Joe and I, or we love getting beers from listeners as well. That's like one of the best things that we can do to kind of introduce people to a beer in their area. But these ones are great for everyone who's listening, because it's a good chance that you can find this, if not in your local store, in a kind of, you know,
little beer shop or something,
beer shop or BevMo or, you know, whatever type beer and liquor store that you've got locally. So
now I'm going to step in and be pretentious.
Okay.
And say, before End Times, when we used to be able to go to bars, there is a bar in our hometown called Town Square, and it's a super dive bar owned by an ex-fireman, and my boss plays like in their golf tournament. I've had lots of work meetings at this bar. Like, more than I'll admit to my wife that I've had at this bar. And they consistently during those times had Cano Bliss on tap. And I bring that up purely to say, out of the can versus off the tap is not insanely different. And a lot of times, something on tap is so much better than what you get out of a can or bottle. Mm-hmm. Like, you're always like, oh, man, not only did I drink so-and-so, but it was on tap at this bar. Like, boom, check that out. Drinking out of the can is still freaking amazing, which is so fantastic.
That was really where I was about to go with this. This is an elite, highly distributed IPA. It is nicely tropically fruity. It has a huge variety of hops that are in there that give some complexity to the flavor that you're not used to in just a general IPA that you'd pull off anywhere. Even down to the craft brews from your local area, they may not be using like there. So you have Mosaic, Azaka, Galaxy, Eldorado, and Idaho 7 hops. So there's a huge combination of hops that make up this beer, and it is smooth. It tastes like 5%, 7.2. Yep. It tastes at like 5.5 at worst. It is dangerously smooth.
And you can call it citrus. You can probably call it tropical too, but it's not.
It is
not
crisp.
Like a super hazy. It's not a super sweet juice IPA. Yeah, it's a nice crisp. Yeah, you get that nice bit, but you also get a nice little bitter at the end.
Uh-huh.
It is as West Coast as a citrus could be, but still just be super refreshing.
Yeah. Yeah, it has like a hint of your hazy style to it, but it's not quite that. It has a crisp flavor. It's tropical and citrusy, but it's none of it's overpowering. It is mostly just kind of crisp and smooth, a little bit of a bitter finish to it.
Smashable.
It is a dangerous, dangerous beer. I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Oh, totally. It is great.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, I'm 1,000%.
Yeah. So that's easy. Yeah. The beer for sure.
On the beer.
You know, it's one of those two, and I'll be honest. I don't choose it a ton at stores because I'm like, well, I can always get this. I want to like try this, whatever. But it's totally one of those beers that I should just be buying more because it's that good.
Absolutely.
Instead of like talking myself out of it because I'm like, I want to try this one I've never seen. Yeah. And then I get
or I want to spend
it.
$20 for a 4-pack.
Right. And then I drink it. And I'm like, that's not really awesome. Like, I'm not super stoked on what I just drank. I could have just gotten a 6-pack of Can of Bliss for the same amount, if not less, and
kind of similar to how like hazy little thing, like you know it's great, it's super cheap for the 6-pack, and it's a good beer, but you still don't reach for it every time, and every time you do, you don't regret it.
No,
like it's a great beer, and this same category. Like,
we're also just in a fucking spoiled ass
place
where I've gone places in like the old like. They have hazy little thing. I'm like, oh, fuck, yes. All right. They've got something that I'm like super stoked to drink.
Yeah. But same thing with Can of Bliss. It's in that same category of, I should probably drink it more, but I also want to try other things. But it is solid. This is solid.
Shattercone, all these beers that were like, oh, this is super good.
Oh,
like,
way better. Way better than Shattercone or any of the, like, no, great. Fantastic. Highly recommend for anyone. I think this is
drinks it
a good beer. So I'm 100% in on the beer. The disc, I've already described my putter change that I made in this episode. And I do like the link. I think it's great. I'm not a big fan of beaded putters, but I do think that those of you that are Discmania throwers or thinking about it, maybe the P2 is a little too overstable for you. I think this is an excellent, excellent choice.
Maybe you like a bead.
Well, no, just in general, like P2s, especially in their premium plastic, are crazy overstable. And so the link gives you another option that is not quite as deep and I think would be a little bit easier to throw for most people, and the plastic is nice. I think that if you're a Discmania thrower or you're looking at those plastics and the P2 is just too much beef for you, the Link is an excellent option. I would highly recommend you try it out. So, and not for me personally, but a great disc and really consistent flight. You can trust it to put some power on it on a drive, even in the exoplastic. So, I mean, I put some full rips on it and I didn't have it turn over or dump on me or anything like that. It was very dependable. So,
and I guess my only piece to add to that too, a reason you may not want to throw P2s and the feel definitely was part of it, but also like I really hate baseline Innova plastic. I hate how DX and D-line feel stiff and slick. Like I don't like, this is definitely way more tacky and grippy with the same kind of firmness. So
yeah,
if you don't mind a bead and you want a plastic that feels better in the hand, this is also great. If you can't get, you know, P-line or whatever the other X-line.
I like the new catchphrase, it feels better in the hand. That's good.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that great in hand, but it probably feels better in the hand than those other ones.
Oh man. All right, so we are 2 for 4, both in on the beer. We like the putter, but not gonna break our bag or the DGP bag.
Yeah, that, so that 2 out of 4, that's 50-50. That's actually how they determined who was number one and number two. They just flipped a coin. And Rick
called Rick Tails?
Tails never fails. So yeah. Good for him.
Good for Rick. Congratulations, Rick. Tails never fails. Number one rated player in the world. Good job. All right, well, that's all we got for you in this episode of the Disc Golf Podcast. I'd like to thank our sponsor, otbdisc.com. Use promo code DGPodcast to get free shipping on your next order. They're the best disc golf retailer in the world. Check them out, otbdisc.com. Next, check out our Slack group. You can find it at our website, throwstuffatstuff.com. There's a join Slack link in the main navigation, and you can join the best disc golf chat group in the whole world. There's thousand plus people in there.
Thousand plus, yep.
Lots of channels for all your different disc golf needs and everything else for that matter. But wonderful place, lots of great people. If you like the show, you will love the Slack group and help you pass the time at work or home or wherever you are now. So check it out, throwstuffatstuff.com, join Slack. It's a great time. Next, hit our Patreon, patreon.com/thediscgolfpodcast. We do a pre-show before every single recording, so if you've burned through our episodes and you're looking for more disc golf podcasts, you can join Patreon and immediately get access to a backlog of pre-shows going back to like episode 70 or something like
that. So 100 plus easily. Just, and sometimes there's more. There's a pre-show and not a main show.
That does happen too. And there's some videos on there, some other stuff. It's good times. So if you love the show, help support us, join Patreon. Again, patreon.com/thediscgolfpodcast. Help support the show, get extra content for yourself. It's a win-win, and I guarantee you'll love it. So check that out, and we appreciate everyone that has done so already. In the meantime, get out there this weekend and throw stuff at stuff.
This is a song for the aceless. But those with aces, listen closely. You don't always have to huck it hard. In fact, sometimes that's not right to do. Sometimes you got to lay it up and fucking outrun an ace or two. Sometimes you got to ease. If you wanna put the D's in the B's, sometimes you got to say, hey, I'm gonna throw it softly. I'm gonna huck it gently. I'm gonna flick it smoothly. I'm gonna toss it so sweetly. And then you say, hey, I hit some metal. Then you say, wait a minute, Robin, I think I'm starting to get it now. Could you feel my throw for me? That's fucking teamwork. What's your favorite disc? That's cool with me. It's not a trespass, but I guess it works for you. What's your favorite beer? The only answer is an IPA, so let's go to the bar. And then I'm gonna flick it so sweetly. And then I'll fucking hook it softly. And then I'll fucking throw it perfectly. But then I'm gonna hook it.